The Eight Immortals Travel East, Chapter 52.
If you want to destroy a group of, you know, immortal, mountain-crushing deities, you probably think you need to forge some epic magical sword.
Right, or spend centuries cultivating invincible martial arts.
Exactly. But Chapter 52 of the classic Chinese text Journey to the East proves that, well, sometimes the absolute most devastating weapon in the cosmos is, wait for it, a meticulously drafted legal complaint.
It is so great. It completely subverts all those usual mythological tropes we're used to.
Oh, for sure. You're expecting epic magical battles, thunderbolts, flying swords, that whole thing.
Right. We're totally conditioned to expect ancient power struggles to be settled by, you know, whoever wields the biggest magical stick.
Yeah.
But the celestial realm in Chinese mythology operates very differently.
It's an administration.
Exactly. Heaven isn't just this ethereal place in the clouds. It's an incredibly complex administrative state. It's heavily modeled on the earthly imperial bureaucracy. So you've got ministries, strict jurisdictions, and like very rigid hierarchies.
And understanding that administrative structure is basically the key to this absolute masterclass and strategy that we are unpacking for you today.
It really is a masterclass.
So for those of you familiar with the lore, you probably already know the Eight Immortals and the Dragon Kings are, well, they are heavyweights in this universe, but we are zeroing in on a very specific, deeply desperate moment.
A very low point for the Dragon King.
Yeah, let me paint the picture here. So the scene opens at the South Sea. The four Dragon Kings are gathered, and the Dragon King of the East Sea is just a complete mess.
Oh, he's totally broken.
Right. He isn't projecting any sort of majestic power. He is literally speechless with grief, weeping openly over the destruction of his realm and his family. The Immortals have just handed him a massive, humiliating defeat.
And, you know, the psychological state of the East Sea Dragon King is really crucial to understand here. He represents the established natural order. I mean, he governs the ocean.
He's the established.
Exactly. While the Eight Immortals, they represent Taoist transcendence, rebellion, and this sort of eccentric rule-breaking power.
For the hooligans in this scenario.
Pretty much. And the Dragon King is weeping because he has just run the calculus of raw power in his head, and he's realized his magic simply cannot beat theirs.
Yeah, if he keeps fighting them on their terms, he's going to be completely eradicated.
Right. And that is exactly when Aoran, another of the Dragon Kings, steps in to comfort him.
And Aoran doesn't just offer, like, a shoulder to cry on.
No, not at all. He proposes a total paradigm shift.
Yeah.
He tells the East Sea Dragon King to lay down his weapons, to stop fighting a magical war altogether.
Which sounds crazy, right?
It does. Yeah. But Aoran suggests they pivot and use heavenly law against the Immortals instead. He tells him, you need to draft a formal petition to the Jade Emperor, the supreme ruler of heaven.
And I was looking at the structure of this trap, and the game theory behind it is just ruthless. It's brilliant.
Oh, Aoran is applying an amazing piece of strategic theory here. When you are outmatched in brute force, you cannot win by playing your opponent's game.
You change the game entirely.
Exactly. You change the axis of the conflict. By petitioning the Jade Emperor to dispatch heavenly troops, Aoran engineers this inescapable lose-lose scenario for the Eight Immortals. It is basically a forced meet in chess.
Yeah, let's break down the scenarios for the listener because it's so good. So, scenario A, the Jade Emperor sends his heavenly army. The army is, you know, overwhelmingly powerful. They crush the Eight Immortals, and the Immortals are legally executed by the state.
Right, the Dragon Kings get their revenge totally legally.
But then scenario B is somehow even worse for the Immortals.
It really is. Suppose the Eight Immortals are actually powerful enough to fight off the Celestial troops and win. The moment they strike back against Heaven's army, they immediately transition from being, you know, local troublemakers to committing high treason against the cosmic state.
Oh, wow. So the Jade Emperor would have to mobilize the entire universe to hunt them down.
Exactly. There's no survival for them in that scenario either.
It's like a cosmic swatting.
Huh. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Like, if you've ever been in a situation where a rival company is outspending and outcompeting you,
yeah.
Aoran's playbook basically says, don't try to outcompete them. You dig through their financials, find an SEC violation, hand it to the federal government, and just let the auditors dismantle them.
You outsource your violence to the state's monopoly on violence. It's weaponizing compliance.
Weaponizing compliance. I love that.
It's a highly effective way to shift risk entirely off your own shoulders and onto this insurmountable system.
I do have to play devil's advocate here for a second, though, because looking at this from the outside, the Jade Emperor is the supreme all-knowing ruler of the cosmos. He's not like an automated inbox.
Like he's a sentient, powerful ruler.
Yeah. So if the Dragon Kings just march up there and try to use his military to settle a personal turf war, wouldn't he see right through that? Filing a frivolous cosmic lawsuit seems like a massive gamble. Like, couldn't you get smited yourself for wasting the Emperor's time?
That is the pivotal vulnerability in the plan. Absolutely. And it brings us to why the actual text of the petition is so masterful.
The drafting of the memo.
Yes. You are entirely correct that the Jade Emperor does not care about personal vendettas. Bureaucracies, even celestial ones, do not operate on emotion. They operate on procedure, jurisdiction, and threats to infrastructure.
So how do they get around that?
Well, the Dragon King survived this gamble because they don't frame the issue as a personal loss. They frame the Eight Immortals as a catastrophic threat to the operational stability of the universe itself.
Okay, so let's get into the actual memorial, the formal legal complaint they draft. Because they lay out these four crimes of the Eight Immortals, and the way they escalate these accusations is a total masterclass in PR spin.
It's incredible framing.
So, crime number one, killing the Dragon King's sons, specifically naming Prince Moji.
And by naming Prince Moji, they aren't just saying, oh, you killed a father's child. Moji is royal blood.
Right.
He is an appointed functionary of the celestial realm. So to the bureaucracy, this isn't murder. This is the assassination of a state official.
Wow. Okay. Then we hit crime number two, burning the Dragon Palace using gourd fire. And we should probably clarify for anyone who might just be picturing a dropped lantern gourd fire is a specific, highly destructive Taoist magical weapon.
Yeah, it's not a campfire.
Yeah.
The Immortals basically used military-grade incendiaries on a government administrative building.
Unbelievable.
It demonstrates this reckless, completely unauthorized use of force. But, you know, those first two crimes are still somewhat localized to the Dragon King's immediate jurisdiction.
Right. It's still kind of a local issue.
Exactly. The true genius of the petition lies in the final two crimes, where they elevate the stakes from local violence to a full-on global catastrophe.
Okay, crime number three. Pushing over Mount Tai, they literally toppled a sacred mountain. And then crime number four, blocking the East Sea.
Just think about the implications of that for the Jade Emperor. Mount Tai is a fundamental pillar of the earthly geography. It's a key site of imperial authority.
That's massive.
And the East Sea is a huge component of the global water cycle. So pushing over a mountain and blocking an ocean isn't a localized turf war anymore. It is unauthorized terraforming.
It's the destruction of cosmic infrastructure.
Precisely. By framing the actions this way, the Dragon Kings essentially force the Jade Emperor's hand. Even if he strongly suspects a personal vendetta, he literally cannot ignore the destruction of his own geographical assets.
It's such brilliant framing. They are basically telling the Emperor, look, they didn't just punch me in the face. They derailed a freight train and blew up the Hoover Dam.
Yes, that is exactly the vibe.
And to really sell this, the Dragon King leans super hard into portraying himself as the ultimate indispensable public servant, right? While painting the Immortals as these chaotic vigilantes.
The contrast drawn in the text is incredibly deliberate. The Dragon King writes that his primary function is to keep the waves calm and ensure that the fish and dragons are harmonious.
A real man of the people.
Oh, yeah. And he specifically highlights his role in watering the crops in Luoyang, nourishing 10,000 acres of productive land.
He practically claims a monopoly on public utility. He's like, I am just the guy keeping the lights on and the crops watered for your subjects.
Right. He is establishing his administrative value to the emperor. He is saying that he is the infrastructure that keeps the human realm functioning and taxable.
Got to keep the taxes flowing.
Exactly. And then he pivots to the Eight Immortals. He accuses them of breaking pure teachings, showing off their magic, and using tricks to boast their abilities.
He totally strips them of their usual mythological reputation, because outside of this specific text, the Eight Immortals are often seen as popular heroes or enlightened beings.
Right, they're beloved figures.
But the Dragon King's petition recasts them as dangerous, unregulated, rogue agents who think they are above the law and are actively destabilizing the peace.
It triggers the ultimate administrative anxiety for a ruler. The Jade Emperor must maintain the mandate of heaven, the divine justification for his rule, which relies entirely on order and harmony.
And rogue magic users violently altering the landscape are a direct threat to that mandate.
Precisely.
And what gets me is that the petition doesn't just rely on cold facts, right? It reaches this wild, totally melodramatic emotional climax.
It's so dramatic.
The Dragon King includes these deeply rhetorical tearjerker questions directed right at the Emperor. He asks, "With my two sons executed, who will inherit my throne? With my dragon palace crushed, where will I live?"
He is laying it on pretty thick.
Seriously. And then he expands it. "If Mount Tai falls, who is the master of the soil? If the East Sea is blocked, where will the small streams flow back to?" I mean, does the Jade Emperor actually care about his feelings, or is it just the cosmic property damage?
Well, the emotional framing there actually accomplishes something very specific in a bureaucratic hierarchy. It's a display of total submission.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, playing the victim can be a profound power move when you are appealing to a higher authority. By asking, "Where will I live and who will inherit?" the Dragon King is explicitly abdicating his own agency.
He's showing he's harmless.
He is demonstrating that he is entirely dependent on the Jade Emperor's grace and protection.
Wow, so it flatters the Emperor's ego while simultaneously dropping this massive administrative headache right on his desk. He's essentially saying, "I am too weak to fix this, so if you don't step in, your oceans will dry up."
That's exactly it.
And the text explicitly notes the Jade Emperor's reaction to this. He reads this heavily engineered document, and he becomes absolutely furious.
But notice what the Supreme Ruler of the Cosmos does next.
Yes.
He doesn't just hurl a thunderbolt from his throne to smite the immortals blindly. He adheres to procedure.
This was my absolute favorite detail in the entire text. You have these gods who can casually move mountains, and their boss decides the appropriate response is to send an auditor.
So good.
He dispatches Grand Marshal Zhao to investigate the East Sea and verify the claims before authorizing any military force.
Because the Jade Emperor operates a government, and governments require a burden of proof. Marshal Zhao isn't sent as an executioner initially. He is sent as an inspector.
Right.
And the Dragon Kings understand this perfectly. They greet Marshal Zhao, offer the customary complaints about the immortal's cruelty, and then they take him on a guided tour of the crime scene.
And we really need to pause and visualize the surreal nature of what Marshal Zhao is actually inspecting here, because he arrives expecting, I don't know, maybe some burned buildings.
Right, a fire.
Instead, the Dragon Kings show him that Mount Tai, one of the most sacred, massive peaks in existence, has been flattened. It is just ground. And the East Sea has been completely filled in and turned into farm fields. It's staggering.
In any dispute, you know, whether it's corporate litigation or a cosmic war, whoever controls the documented reality wins.
Yes.
The Dragon Kings didn't just rely on hearsay or whining. They brought the state's auditor to a scene of undeniable, physically irrefutable devastation.
It's the ultimate cosmic standard of picks or it didn't happen.
Huh, exactly.
You can argue all day about who started a fight, but you cannot argue with an ocean that has been turned into a farm. The visual evidence completely removes the Dragon King's personal bias from the equation. The geography itself is testifying against the immortals.
And that is the exact moment the trap snaps shut. Marshal Zhao sees the geographical catastrophe, and the burden of proof is met.
The audit is complete.
The administrative gears lock into place. The state's machinery of war is now fully authorized and activated.
So Marshal Zhao turns to the Dragon Kings and asks for the final piece of actionable intelligence. Where are the immortals right now?
And the Dragon Kings, who have obviously been closely tracking their enemies this whole time while playing the helpless victims, inform the Marshal that the eight immortals are currently gathered at the Long War Assembly.
Just a very convenient celestial gathering, making them all grouped up and vulnerable to a coordinated strike. So Marshal Zhao immediately rallies his heavily armed heavenly troops and marches off to execute the state's wrath.
He is doing the Dragon Kings' dirty work, fully funded and sanctioned by the Jade Emperor.
It's wild. The execution of Aorun's strategy is just flawless here.
The Dragon Kings absorbed zero risk. They manipulated the supreme authority into breaching the enemy's defenses for them.
And what the Dragon Kings do next is the final touch of brilliance. They don't just sit back and watch from a distance.
No, they go.
Once the heavily armed heavenly troops march off to engage the immortals at the assembly, the Dragon Kings quietly mobilize their own aquatic armies to follow behind.
Right. They wait for heaven to do the heavy lifting.
Exactly. Let the feds break the immortals' magical defenses and absorb all the casualties. And only then do they plan to swoop in and participate in the slaughter.
Completely shielded by the legal mandate of the state.
Yeah.
They turn a devastating, humiliating defeat into a legally sanctioned zero-risk victory.
Unbelievable.
By the time their own troops engage, the battle is no longer a personal vendetta. They are merely, you know, assisting the federal authorities in apprehending dangerous fugitives.